sense, like, how do we start to move towards unlimiting our beliefs? And what kind of things are we doing? I'm thinking like social media, but you probably have other ideas, on an ongoing basis that fuels us in the wrong direction.
The first step is awareness that when we have these limiting beliefs, when we think them or we even say them, that we become aware of, oh, okay, that's what that is. It's not a fact, which I often joke and say is the F word holding you back, because fact is a four-letter word beginning with F, right?
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it, that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. So if you want to have a badass woman on your show, I can think of no one better than Karen Brown. Karen is an executive coach who focuses on limiting beliefs, but that isn't actually the power behind this woman. The power behind this woman is what she did through her own journey of conquering limited beliefs, and that is what enables her to do her work in the world. Karen Brown is an Ironman world champion finisher, and she shares with us the story of looking at and understanding this goal and how she had to overcome her own limiting beliefs related to her skill and who she was as an athlete in order to be able to compete in one of the toughest competitions on earth. Brown is a thought leader in leadership and professional performance and published two books on the subject, most recently, Unlimiting Your Beliefs, 7 Keys to Greater Success in Your Personal and Professional Life. Karen is deeply committed to abolishing the limiting beliefs that hold us back as entrepreneurs and frankly, as people in general. It was a real pleasure to be able to welcome Karen to the show, and perfect timing as we get started on a brand new year and on a fresh slate of what we are all capable of achieving. It is really an honor to introduce you to Karen Brown. Karen Brown, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you, Dr. Megan Walker. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I'm really excited to get into your story and your background. And I know we tried to do this a few months ago, and I remember being super excited then to be able to jump into this, and then we had to reschedule. So we're going to try again. And I am still thrilled to be able to delve into who you are and what brought you to this place. And I would love for you to share with my audience your story and the twists and turns that brought you to where you are today.
Yes. Okay. So it goes like this. For 28 years, I was a successful professional in the corporate world. And don't worry, entrepreneurs, this does circle back to being an entrepreneur. But I was outwardly successful. You know, I had all the outward signs of success, like a nice house. I took great vacations. I had a nice wardrobe, a nice car, etc. I was married, all those kinds of things. And I was also a recreational athlete. I've always been active and athletic and at a recreational level. And during those 28 years, I had this growing, nagging feeling inside that I was capable of more and that I wasn't tapping into it. And as it grew, it began to sort of put on a face of, I'm living a small, safe life. And that began to feel really ugly because I knew I was capable of more. And the capability I'm talking about, I always came face to face with when I would see the coverage of the Ironman World Championships on TV. And every single time I saw it, which was annually, I would start crying because this wave of emotion would well up inside of me. And it was that same feeling that, hey, I think I'm capable of more. And what if I'm capable of doing this? This crazy, best of the best, global, quintessential human test of endurance. I felt this kinship, this relatability to that race. And quickly, every single time I would see the race and go through these emotions, I would also talk myself out of pursuing it. And it would go exactly like this. I would say to myself, well, they're elite athletes, professional athletes, most of them. And I'm a recreational athlete. They're up here and I'm down here. I couldn't possibly compete. And boom, the dream, the idea, the thought that I had the capability inside of me to do that would vanish. And what I finally found out was that what I was experiencing is a scientifically proven thing called limiting beliefs. And it goes exactly like I experienced, where we think, well, I don't have enough talent, time, money, skill, support, whatever, to achieve X. That is essentially a limiting belief. And here's the thing that I also found out at the same time, is that this only happens in our own heads. There's no one telling us, oh, you know, you aren't capable of doing that. You don't have what it takes. Now, to be fair, sometimes there are those people outside of us telling us that. That's a whole nother part of the book. Oftentimes, those are just their limiting beliefs that they're throwing on us. So again, what I came to realize very quickly was, oh, this is a scientific thing that happens in my mind that is holding me back from what I'm truly capable of doing. And once I realized that and the antidote to it, the way to change it and rewire it, I actually that fall started to pursue the Ironman World Championships and then dove even deeper into the power of the unconscious mind, which is where limiting beliefs live. And by doing that and harnessing that power, I crossed the finish line in Kona, Hawaii at the Ironman World Championships 2 years later.
That's amazing. Why do we do this? Why do we have limiting beliefs?
All right, here's how it works. So if you think of caveman brain and caveman times, right? Our unconscious mind was created to protect us and keep us alive. And so instantly our unconscious mind, and this is still the way it works today, even in modern times, our unconscious mind has to instantly size up friend, food, or foe. And it has to get us to take immediate action based on judging one of those things. And it will always come down on the side of trying to keep us safe, which means staying in its same patterns, which means staying in comfort in what it's done before and what it knows. Anytime we're trying to push the envelope, I hear this a lot, stepping out of our comfort zone. I like to think expanding our comfort zone because that's actually more accurate with how it works in the neurosciences. But anytime we're trying to do something new that is going to be very challenging and perhaps something we've never done before or at a level that we've never achieved before, our unconscious mind is going to do its best to keep us from doing it, because it looks upon that as dangerous. And it's really that simple. Like, that's why I use the term caveman brain, because our unconscious mind is the most simplistic and powerful machine, because it drives all learning, behavior, and change. And yet it operates at such a simplistic level that honestly, once we understand how it's operating, it's just like, you know, how your computer operates. Once you understand the operating system, then you can actually manipulate it and change it and rewire it to get a different result. But until then, you know, like I did for 28 years, I held myself back from this race that honestly was the gateway to what I was meant to do and who I was meant to be. And it's all because of this sort of default programming system called the unconscious mind.
And so I'm deeply curious about this, because one of the things I've experienced this in my own life, and I know I've had clients and patients who talk about this, but it's very much like, oh, I'll be able to do one of those things once I've achieved this mysterious level of success or feedback or whatever it happens to be that culture or society sends us a message, and then we accelerate. How do we start to interrupt that conversation that we have with ourselves? In essence, like, how do we start to move towards unlimiting our beliefs? And what kind of things are we doing? I'm thinking like social media, but you probably have other ideas, on an ongoing basis that fuels us in the wrong direction.
Oh, goodness. Wow. That's the rest of the show.
Great.
I'll do my best to answer briefly. Okay. So first of all, the first step is awareness that when we have these limiting beliefs, when we think them or we even say them, that we become aware of, oh, okay, that's what that is. It's not a fact, which I often joke and say is the F word holding you back, because fact is a four-letter word beginning with F, right? And we think that these limiting beliefs are facts. Oh, you know, I can't do that because I don't have enough whatever, or I'm not enough. But it's not a fact. It's just a limiting belief. So first step is awareness. And I actually have a document that we can put in the show notes that will walk listeners through how to unlimit these limiting beliefs. And it's a quick three steps, and I can outline it really quickly here. And then your listeners can go for free and get it on the website, the show notes site.
Amazing. Yep. We'll hook them up.
Yeah. So it starts with awareness. Then you ask yourself a question, which is, okay, what's stopping me from achieving X, whatever my dream or goal is? That causes you to be able to discover the unlimiting belief, or there could be more than one. As I found in my case, there was a whole page of these limiting beliefs. I only came face to face with the top one, but there were a lot more holding me back. So that question opens up and allows you to discover what are the limiting beliefs that are holding you back. Then we identify the exact opposite of that limiting belief, which is an unlimiting belief. And then all we have to do is actively in the moment, when we are now aware of these limiting beliefs every day, then we're going to actively stop and say out loud the unlimiting version of that belief. And that is how we actually rewire our thought pattern and the way that our unconscious mind is used to working.
And do we have to run around and gather evidence for the new belief? Like, how do we reinforce it once we put it in front of ourselves?
Great question. So I would say rather than evidence, when we put in front of us on a consistent basis what achieving that dream or goal is going to mean to us, more specifically, what it will look, feel, and sound like when we achieve it, because those are doorways into the unconscious mind. When you tie into that every single day consistently, and I would tie into this multiple times a day. I mean, I put a visual representation of what it would mean to achieve that goal of crossing the Ironman finish line. I put it everywhere so that it was at work and at home. And if I was in my car, it was on my mobile, it was everywhere. So I literally saw it everywhere that I went during the day. Now, that does reinforce changing this thought pattern in your unconscious mind. And it literally starts to let your unconscious mind identify as what you're going for. So literally my unconscious mind started to identify with the Ironman. Okay, I'm a triathlete. I'm an Ironman. And just for listeners' sake, prior to this, prior to pursuing the Ironman, I had not run a marathon. I had not ridden a road cycle or a road bike. I was a really terrible swimmer. In fact, I had to have two swimming coaches because I was so terrible. I had to talk my first coach into taking me on because I was a super nobody in this world. I had never done a triathlon. And I'm not a naturally fast or talented athlete. So I'm just like everybody else. You know, I wasn't natural. I didn't have any natural ability in this area. I didn't have any experience with it. I just had this big, hairy, audacious dream that I felt I probably had the capability to achieve. And I was right. And that's the other thing I want to impart to the audience. When you have that feeling deep inside, because I know everybody knows what I'm talking about, that feeling is right. And most often we find that that is the gateway to higher level of success, higher results, you know, finding your purpose, doing what you were meant to do, you know, even leaning into your gifts. That is the gateway to it.
Do you feel like men and women experience limiting beliefs differently?
Yes, I do.
In what ways?
So specifically, because now, you know, I've been doing this for years. You know, I've studied human behavior extensively. I mean, that's one of the reasons you're having me on the show is because I'm a subject matter expert in this field. So, you know, have a lot of background and research and experience in this. So what I see most often with women is that, you know, they're the caregivers. And I know that probably sounds cliche, but it's true. So if you think about, you know, caveman times and how we were created, you know, women are caregivers by nature and by definition. So what I typically see with them is they experience limiting beliefs in putting everybody else first. Oh, you know, I've got to support my kids and my husband or my spouse, my mate. You know, I've got to accomplish these other things before I can start pursuing this for myself. Now, men, on the other hand, they experience limiting beliefs more with capability. Like I was talking to a gentleman the other day who is very successful in the space industry. And I mean, this is a tough industry and this guy is really smart and he's got a whole page, a whole book of accomplishments behind him professionally. And once he found out, we were in a social setting. And once he found out that I'm an ultra athlete, because after I did the Ironman, I went fully crazy and went into ultra endurance sports for 8 years.
That is crazy. Good for you. That's amazing.
It's crazy great, right? It's crazy badass, like all of us are, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, to me, crazy is a bit of a compliment because I have no limiting beliefs around that term. But that is, an Ironman is nuts. But ultra athletes, like this is that's a whole different level.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, so case in point, and I totally agree with what you just said. Case in point, even though Ironman was the biggest thing I could think of at the time, like that blew my mind to think about the Ironman World Championships, right? That's 140.1 miles in one day, swim, bike, and run in really tough conditions. But that was the biggest thing I could think of. Until after I did it, and then it's like this huge door opened to this whole other world called ultra endurance sports. Then I discovered something called the Ultraman, which is a 320-mile, three-day triathlon. And then I did that twice.
Oh, my
gosh.
So,
there's always another level, right? But, you know, just start with the level that you see. Right? Because that's the right place for you to be. But getting back to this gentleman that I was talking to, once he found out that I was an ultra endurance athlete, he looked at me a whole different way. And he's a runner and a long distance runner, but having trouble getting to a 50K. And so he said, well, you know, I have this niggle with my knee and I have this other thing, you know, nutritionally that happens. And those were his limiting beliefs. So that's typically how men experience limiting beliefs. Like they'll put themselves out there to pursue a big goal or dream, but then they're experiencing limiting beliefs in more of the tactical, executional pieces.
Yeah. And so if we're looking at that piece, and our audience is predominantly women, so I don't mean to exclude the men who are listening, but do we unpack those limiting beliefs differently when we're then addressing men or women in that regard?
No. That's why I wrote the book. This should be accessible to everyone. And honestly, it's my mission with the book to eradicate limiting beliefs and transform our world. Because if you think about how different all of our lives would be, all of our lives, all of our businesses, all of our families, and then the world, when no one would struggle with limiting beliefs, it truly is astounding. So, and it doesn't matter. This is also why I created this tool for everyone to use to be able to identify their limiting beliefs and then transform them into unlimiting.
I truly love that. And it was interesting because I was at a conference back in September, and there was a speaker there talking about the concept of limiting beliefs. And for the next, I'm going to say 6 weeks, my husband and I, every time literally one of us would talk about something we wanted to do or where we were feeling challenges, we'd be like, is that real? Or is that a limiting belief? And it was amazing by triaging these things, how often our issues were actually totally limiting beliefs. They weren't actually real problems at all. And it was incredibly liberating because it opened up this whole new way of thinking of every problem in front of you before you attached limiting beliefs to it. Anyways, it was just a really cool experience that we had. And then one of the things that we got talking about, and I would love your perspective on this, is how do we start to create a culture within our family? We have three daughters. They are 3, 5, and 7. How do we start to create a culture of language for them related to limiting beliefs? Because I actually feel like every day they go to school, they are bombarded with limiting beliefs just in how the system is set up. So I'm curious if you have some interesting experiences in that respect in dealing with kids.
Yes. Oh, such great questions. Yes. So here's the thing. Everybody has an unconscious mind and it works the same way. So whether you're a kid, you're an adult, you're a male or female. And again, that's how we access and have this ability to change these thought patterns. And I would say language is a big deal because if you study the science of neuro-linguistic programming, that's picking up on words that people are using that show you what they're feeling, what they're thinking at the time. So specifically, when someone uses the word try, that's a dead giveaway that they are suffering from limiting beliefs around whatever they're talking about. So I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to do my best. Dead giveaway. That is a limiting belief right there. It's right under the surface. And that is the flag that should show you to delve deeper into it and to, you know, to then ask questions like you and your husband were. Well, you know, do you think that's a fact? Or do you think that that's a limiting belief?
I am laughing to myself as you say that because I'm thinking about a girlfriend who asked me for coffee and I was like, I am going to try to make it, but I'll let you know. And I was like, oh, she's going to listen to this podcast episode. She's going to be like, are you coming for coffee or are we? But it's true. It's amazing how often you hear or we use a language like I'm going to try to do this or I'm going to do my best or I'm going to where you're almost intuitively aware that people are not into it or confident that they can step into that space.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so glad you came up with this example of coffee because actually the science behind what happens there is you already have a limiting belief about it because you use the word try. Then what happens in your unconscious mind is it's thinking, well, we're probably not going to be able to do that. So it literally turns on this sort of radar system called your reticular activation system, RAS for short.
Yep.
where it starts looking. It's literally like radar. It starts looking for something else that needs your attention worse than you going to coffee. And it's going to find it. Yeah. So that then you go, oh, shoot, I can't make it. I have this other thing that I just have to, you know, take care of. So can you give me a rain check? Yeah, this happens all the time. Only again, we don't connect the dots that this is actually what's happening. And there's more words than this. I can put this on the show notes as well. Try is the number one word, but B-U-T is the second word. So pay attention to how often you or your kids or your spouse or your friends are using the word but. Also, need, don't, not that, and the classic, well, I just don't want that to happen.
Right.
Because once you say, I don't want that to happen, that's exactly what will happen.
Yeah. And I actually very consciously, like in that context, I have very consciously attempted to remove the word just from any of my communications, because I feel like that does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a gateway word to minimalizing and you're minimizing. And you're quite right. Like that language piece is so critical. And so for so many of the people who are listening, as entrepreneurs, some are solo entrepreneurs, but a lot of them are leading teams. And are there things, I know you've probably learned a lot about being a leader, having competed in the Ironman and the work that you were doing in corporate before, but are there some key things in terms of facilitating a culture that moves people past limiting beliefs that we should be aware of as entrepreneurial leaders when we're working within our teams? Is it a language piece? Is there some key cultural components? Like how would you tackle that piece when you're working within a corporate context or a team context?
So two things there. Number one is pay attention neurolinguistically to the words that I just shared. Your unconscious mind is so simple, it's almost scary. Okay, it is the operating system is really, really simple. So it's honestly with that those six or seven words that I gave, those are the biggest markers to being able to see what's going on for someone. So key in on those and then just build their awareness when you hear them use them. And the key to doing that is asking them questions. Hey, I heard you use the word try. What are you really thinking with regard to, or what's your real belief in accomplishing this? And very quickly, they're going to open up about it. Now, the second thing as a leader that's really effective with teams is connecting the company goals and their daily tasks to achieve them to their values. And the easiest way to describe a value, especially an unconscious value, which is really what we're talking about, is why is the person working there? Like what gets them out of bed every day to come to work for you? That whatever they come up with when you ask them that question, and it's really just that easy. Hey, what gets you out of bed every day to come and work here? And then shut up and let them think about it and come up with the answer. Once they do, you know, it's, I really relate to our mission. Okay, great. So what can you connect with that value of our mission to your daily work? And it is truly astounding what they will come up with. Then whatever they come up with, encourage them to keep that in front of them. And once you connect the dots for them in this way, get out of their way. Because literally, it is like rocket fuel. You will not be able to stop them. In fact, like it will be like a locomotive passing by you at 100 miles an hour. And then just be ready because they're going to be looking for other things. You know, they're going to be looking for their next steps in growth and development and, you know, what else can they do up the chain in the organization?
Right.
And you can even let them come up with that. Hey, you know what the mission is. So what do you see on the horizon? What is your next step in growth and development? And, you know, what's the next thing you feel like you can contribute to our mission?
Are there some commonalities you see? Actually, I had a different question I wanted to ask, but as you were saying that, are there commonalities that you see in terms of different types of limiting beliefs that people bring to the table? Like, do you start to see patterns where people's limiting beliefs around money come from stories they've always heard about money, or people's limiting beliefs around physicality and what their capabilities are came from, you know, like a bad experience with gym when they were younger? Or is it more generally someone is conditioned to living in a yeah, but state and they apply it universally? Do you see what I'm getting with
okay,
that?
Okay, yes, yes. The quick answer is yes. First of all, I do see commonalities. The first one is always lack of time. I don't have enough time. I'm too busy. Yeah. And man, that is the biggest limiting belief of all. Because you know what? We all have 24 hours in a day and we all need, you know, a certain amount of sleep and et cetera, et cetera. And at the same time, we can all point to people around us that are more successful than we are, or they seem to get more done than we do. They don't have, you know, they don't have it any easier than we do or have some, you know, magic pill. No, it's just how they view their time and how they choose to spend their time. That's a big thing, a big lesson that I learned in pursuing and achieving this goal of Ironman, because prior to that, I thought it was very organized, very focused. I had a high level game for that. And honestly, once I had to go from working out 5 or 6 days a week at an hour each to 22 to 24 hours a week, plus going to the chiropractor and the physical therapist and taking care of my nutrition and getting enough sleep, I really came face to face with, what up-leveling my game looked like. And there was a whole huge additional level above where I was playing. And I just didn't have the awareness of it. I mean, even though I saw these people that were playing at a higher level than me, I didn't know how they got there. So that's the biggest thing that I see. Now remind me of the second half of your question, because it was separate.
Well, yeah, I was really curious about, well, one, just patterns. So certainly time being one of them. I'm sure one of them you hear is money. I don't have enough money. Like resourcefulness in general is, I think, resources is a common limiting belief for people. But I was also curious about commonalities in terms of the stories that you hear in terms of people where, like, the kinds of limiting beliefs they end up with as adults. Is there a commonality to their stories and experiences that they've had as children? And it might not even be something that you have looked into, but I'm always really curious about those types of pieces. How our experiences sculpt our limiting beliefs?
Yes. Oh, such a great question. Yes. And the commonality that I see there is either I'm not enough or I don't have enough.
Mm. Those are biggies and different.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they almost take root gender specifically. So women, most often I see them coming in on the side of I'm not enough. And men come in on the side of I don't have enough.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you know what? Both of those come from childhood experiences. And I know that sounds cliche, but it doesn't make it any less true. What we experience from 0 to 7 is really pivotal for setting up these filters and beliefs, especially once what we've watched our parents do. So every time we work with clients and we ask the question, once we uncover this limiting belief of where did this come from? You know, when is the first time you remember running this limiting belief, or where did you learn this from? And once they think about this for just a minute, because this is not something that, you know, people think of readily every day, right? It's not like, you know, we run around asking each other these questions every day. We don't. And so once they take a minute to think of it, because the answers are in there, they almost always come up with, oh, this is what I watch my mom or my dad doing. Or, you know, this happened to me at age 6, you know, where I saw this, you know, I experienced this thing, you know, with money, or I was comparing myself to someone else and they were more capable than I was. And so, you know, they end up coming away with the belief that, oh, you know, they're not enough.
It is amazing how critical, even as you were saying this, I was like, oh, I wish that I could just push pause on parenting each evening when they ask these questions and expect an immediate response. Because there's so much opportunity for growth and sculpting the way they think at such a young age. And I did another interview earlier this week, and we were just talking about the concept of conscious parenting. And if you are able to be conscious as a parent, what an incredible gift that you can give your kids as they move through life.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And especially when you know how their brain works, you know, what the default mechanism is, then, you know, and I think that it all comes down to whatever relationship we're in, whether you're a parent, you're a spouse, you're a friend, whatever. It all comes down to caring enough to ask somebody good questions, you know, because people almost never do what others tell them, but they almost always do what they think up. So having said that, and this is perfectly relatable for leaders and teams, right? How many times have we as a leader or a parent told someone what to do and they resist, right? They don't do it. And then we're like, well, that was perfectly sound advice. Why didn't they take it? Well, that's the reason. So if you ask them questions, especially great questions, you know, like we were just talking about, you know, is that a fact or is that a limiting belief? And you let them think about it. You know, and where does this come from? When is the first time you remember doing this or thinking this?
Well, and I think it's Tony Robbins who said, and I'm sure others have put it in different contexts, that the quality of your life is aligned to the quality of your questions. And when you are a leader, the same thing with your teams or your business or your family or your relationships, the quality of your questions are going to help to determine the quality of outcome for those individuals as well. It's such a great point. And I'm glad it reminded me of that idea. Karen, I want to get a sense from you. You're doing some really big work and you have accomplished incredible things in this world, but what do you want your legacy to be?
Well, two things. Number one is the mission at hand, which is eradicating limiting beliefs and transforming the world. The second mission.
Only that?
Only that. That small, you know, thing.
Yeah.
And then the second is through my business Velocity. So we coach senior executive leaders or founders or owners one-on-one to recognize and then resolve and change their behavioral patterns that are blocking higher levels of success. And so the mission with that is to elevate leadership and effectiveness and the impact that it has on everyone. So just two small things, you know, I should be able to achieve those in, I don't know, hopefully another 50 years.
Oh, I think that's a limitation. You can do it in way less than that.
That's right, right?
See?
That sounds like it was skirting a limiting belief, right?
Yeah. I don't want you to go there. Not on my watch. We will not let that happen.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Karen, how would you define health?
I would say being able to do what I want to do, when I want to do it, how I want to do it.
I hear you on that.
Our body is a series of interconnected systems. What is happening in one system puts pressure on another. We understand this intuitively, and yet the most powerful medical system in the world, Western medicine, continues to evaluate our health in individualized silos. We have assessments related to cardiovascular health, oncology, respirology, dermatology. We have individual silos of expertise. When we assess the body from a functional perspective in our practice, we want to understand not whether you are necessarily fine in all of these different systems, but whether or not they are functioning in an integrative manner in a way that moves you closer to optimal health. While there are lots of functional tests that we can do to be able to assess that,
Technology is enabling us to start to look at this thing on the basis of artificial intelligence through the aggregation of data. We do this in our practice using a tool called Living Matrix, and I want to make this assessment available to you. If you go to our new website, AnthropologyPerformanceLabs.com. On the front page, you will see an opportunity for you to opt in into your personalized functional medicine quiz. Completing this questionnaire will take approximately 40 minutes of your time. And when you're finished, we're going to prompt you to have an opportunity to sit down from someone on our medical team to review your individualized results. We are all on big missions. We are all trying to change the world. It's no longer sufficient for our health to simply be fine. For us to achieve what we want to do as badass women with a vision for how we can help the world, we need to move our health to a place of optimal. And I invite all of you the opportunity to see how close to that line you really are. Go to AnthropologyPerformanceLabs.com and do your quiz today. On that note, and with that insight, I think it's a really perfect place to transition to the second portion of the interview. And this is where we really focus on some of your key performance indicators as an individual. So just like we would have them in our business, I think we have them with respect to how we live our lives as well. And so this just gives our listeners a little bit of a glimpse in terms of how you put these things into practice in your own world. So if you'll indulge me, I've got six rapid fire questions for you.
I love these. I love this part.
Okay, so here we go. You ready?
Yep.
Do you have a consistent evening routine? And if so, can you share it?
Yes, I do.
I suspected.
So, yeah. First of all is sleep. And I learned this the hard way over and over and over because I can be a little stubborn. And so my consistent evening routine is first to go to bed on time. And for me, that is 8 or 8:30. I need 8 to 9 hours of sleep a night. And I'm an early morning riser. That's something that comes with becoming an Ultraman and getting into the endurance athletic world. So that just works for me, too. And it sets me up to do my one thing, which makes everything else easier or unnecessary, which is exercising in the morning, first thing in the morning. So I go to bed on time. I also have a hard stop at 6 o'clock. So no matter what's going on, I don't care if, you know, there's a meltdown going on. 6 o'clock is hard stop. If I haven't already shut down my computer, it's shutting down at 6 o'clock and I'm not doing any more business. I'm not looking at my mobile. And I'm a huge movie buff, and that is how I turn my brain off and relax and get ready to transition to sleep. So I eat dinner pretty early, actually, and then transition to watching a movie for an hour or an hour and a half, and then I go to bed.
I like that. I think you've maybe answered this question already, but what is the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Well, I did touch on it, but there's two other things additionally. So exercise 6 days a week for me. And, you know, you don't have to be an ultra athlete, you know, to have that work for you. And I think the important thing to note there is I think health is also all about finding what works for your system, your body, your mind, your soul, your spirit, and then sticking with it. So the other thing I'm most consistent with is something that's in my book, and they're called green smoothies. These are water-based with a banana, three parts fruit. The rest is a couple scoops of protein powder. For me, I'm mostly plant-based, so plants with, you know, whatever protein source I can fit in. And then the rest is greens, and for me, spinach really works. But I go through that in the book, and there's another book on that called Green for Life. Really good book, and it's all based in science. And so green smoothies are the key to so many things for me. I would say I'm really consistent with my health, with eating clean. And that was a tough thing for me. Honestly, that took years to finally master. I mean, I grew up probably eating way too much sugar. And I grew up in the school of the thought that if I just worked out enough, I could eat whatever I wanted to. And so for me now, you know, green smoothies, you know, it helps me to eat clean because it triggers me to have the right portion size, to not, you know, crave sugar and processed foods, which I think processed foods are the kiss of death. I think that's what's causing
literally
so many problems. Yeah, in our world. So consistent with my health in terms of green smoothies, eating clean, finding what works for my system and sticking with it, sleep, and exercise.
A fabulous foundation. Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
I gotta say, always nonfiction. I really have a tough time with fiction. So I'm most drawn to stories of transformation, and they're always real life stories, right? That's both in movies and books. And I'm also drawn to anything that has to do with the brain, the neurosciences, thought processes, that kind of thing. So the two books that I'm reading right now, number one is Hardwiring Happiness by Rick Hansen. I'm also doing some spiritual work right now. And so the other book on my nightstand is a book by a Franciscan monk who is radical. And he is oh so cool at like 78 years young. His name is Richard Rohr, R-O-H-R. And the book I'm reading is about finding your true self. And it's called Immortal Diamond.
Oh, I haven't heard of it. So interesting. I get the best reading recommendations from my guests who literally 99% of them, we've done 100 episodes, read nonfiction.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's been really fascinating. It's very rare. And when it is fiction, they're fabulous suggestions. But it is, I think the reality is we've had two people who are fiction readers. Just anyways, as an aside.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know? So aside from the totally badass distances you run and swim and bike.
I love this question. And actually my best friend helped me with this a while back when I was first faced with this question. Cause I had a hard time answering it. And she said that and she's also traveled to 7 major races with me across the world. And she's not athletic at all. I love supercars.
Oh, cool.
I love supercars. Like if I could own a Bugatti Veyron, I would, as well as some other things. When I was just in Italy earlier this year for a big race, I was thrilled to get the opportunity to drive a Ferrari. And I love watching the show that is now the Grand Tour and used to be Top Gear out of the UK.
Right. Yep.
Oh my gosh. That is such fun. I mean, 3 guys that get paid to test out supercars and do challenges with all these different kinds of automobiles. Oh, it's hilarious and fun and frivolous and indulgent. And yeah, I dig it.
Yeah. I have to say it is actually a fun show.
Yeah.
Okay, so aside from fantasizing about supercars, what do you do for fun or play?
I watch movies, probably first and foremost. My first job was an usher in a movie theater. So I just love actors and scripts and story and the craft and all of that. I have such a reverence for it. So probably movies first. Books second. Exercise and physical activity would be third. And I love learning. So, you know, that can be going to an art gallery for me or, you know, visiting with a group of people, you know, if I'm doing a speech and, you know, and anything that involves learning something new. Oh, man, I just really enjoy that.
So great when you reach a point in your life and your career where you get to actively engage in learning and growth for the sake of it. It is such a privilege. Last question for you. Entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
We learn it. We learn it. It's the same thing with leadership. We are not born leaders. We learn how to be a leader. And I can relate this to my own story. For that 25 years that I talked about, I was in the corporate world and I was perfectly happy being there. And I thought I would spend my whole life there. And in fact, I was engaged to a gentleman at the time, and he had been an entrepreneur his whole life. And he talked about how great it was. And I would just look at him, you know, with the wrinkle between my eyebrows and, you know, the crinkled up lip and be like, what are you talking about? Like, you have to worry about where your paycheck is coming from, and you have to work really hard. And, you know, you don't have the security of, you know, a corporate paycheck and benefits and all of that. And so we had this ongoing, you know, kind of argument about it. It was really foreign to me at the time. And I kept thinking, there's no way. Like, I would hate that. And then evolutionary process, you know, in the next 5 years at my corporation, you know, we had all these changes and mergers and different bosses and things. And it got progressively worse and worse and worse. And finally, I was left with the worst boss in the entire universe. And the term of endearment I used for him at the time was that he was a pathetic excuse for a human being, which was accurate.
I've heard that term of endearment before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He earned it well. It was through that evolutionary process that I learned that being an entrepreneur was so much better. And then I actively, you know, decided to jump into being an entrepreneur. And at first I was horrible at it. And so I really had to, you know, just dig in and learn it and change my ways and change my behavioral patterns. And the more I did, the better I got at it. And ultimately, you know, the more successful I became. But it also wasn't overnight. And, you know, I'm really grateful to that pathetic excuse for a human being, because I think entrepreneurship is where it's at. And so I'm really glad to be an entrepreneur and have walked that road.
Well, and what I love about entrepreneurship is that every day it challenges you to confront your limiting beliefs, like you're in a limiting beliefs lab. So it's been such a pleasure and so relevant to our audience to have the opportunity to chat with you today. Well worth the wait. Karen, I know people are going to want to learn more about what you're up to. Where can we send them?
Okay, send them here. And listeners, share this with everyone, right? All the people you care about, they struggle with limiting beliefs too. So what I'm about to share with you, share with them. Okay, so the name of my company is Velocity Leadership Consulting. So just put those three words together, .com with a /anthropology.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. And we will hook everyone up in our show notes so that they can access you there. Karen Brown, thank you so much for sharing your time and wisdom with us today.
Thank you for having me on. Cheers to all your listeners. And I look forward to, you know, us carrying out the mission together.
Absolutely. Thank you again.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.